AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. The White House is adding to its plan to reduce commodity prices. Yeah, you heard that right. We'll talk more about that in a minute. We've got an update on WOTUS, a real plan to increase production. And today's Farmer Forum will have a focus on water, but we'll also hear what it's like to farm on the border.
Live from beneath the gathering swelter dome via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Joe Del Bosque and James Johnson. Right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much, and welcome all to AgriTalk. Glad that you are here this morning. We've got a very interesting and fun show. I hope it's going to be fun.
She's a humdinger. Forum, yeah.
You bet it is. The Farmer Forum, our old friend Joe Del Bosque out in California is going to be here to talk about what they're doing right now on production, some of the issues and the challenges that they are dealing with in their melon production in particular out in California. So we'll get that. And then we also have James Johnson, who has been on AgriTalk before. It was back in 2019 that James was on the show with us. And we talked then about what it was like farming on the border. And we need to get an update. We need to get an update. How has it changed now? And how is it different now? And what are some of the challenges that he has to deal with farming right on the border with Mexico? Should be a very interesting conversation. And of course, labor issues. Both James and Joe deal with labor issues all the time. And then Zippy Duvall actually recorded the conversation with Mr. Duvall this morning. We covered a lot of ground, including a real plan. We get to it at the very end of the conversation with Zippy, but it is a real plan to increase production in the U.S., a way to, and I'm talking about food production, a real way to step it up. So it's very interesting. And we've got a lot of news to share, too, buddy. Let's go ahead and get to it.
Sure thing, Chip. Well, President Biden and his administration are taking steps to curb inflation. And Biden lamented Congress's lack of progress in enacting his agenda. Biden said tackling inflation is his top economic challenge as gas prices have surged to a new high despite White House efforts to stabilize them, as he sought to characterize the high prices as an extension of Russian President Vladimir Putin's war in Ukraine. The administration also announced last month that it will resume lease sales for oil and gas on federal land, although it did make it clear it only did so because of a court order.
Okay, well, he better get to work on fighting inflation. Inflation was hotter than expected at 8.5% in April. The CPI was out this morning, 6.5 on the core, which excludes food and energy prices. This was a temporary setback, too, because after fuel prices surged in March, they stabilized in April, and now we're seeing rising prices again.
Yep.
So this is a temporary. It's 8.5. You remember? I can't even. Remember on Friday during yes. during the free for all, I said, "Yeah, I think we are going to see a setback, even all the way to 7.5% on the CPI." It's 8.5%. He better get to work. And Davis, I watched his speech twice. I don't think he understands the economics. I don't think the team understands the economics. How are you going to fight inflation by throwing more money into the system? That's not how it works.
Well, the operator of Ukraine's gas network announced that it would stop the flow of Russian natural gas to Europe through a key pipeline for the first time. Fuel has been piped through the country for the duration of the war so far. The operator's boss said that Russian troops have been rerouting gas to separatist areas in the east, but did not provide evidence for that claim. Meanwhile, Ukrainian officials said that their armed forces have taken back territory north of Kharkiv from the Russians. Chip, the White House will announce new measures on food prices and the war in Ukraine when President Biden visits a farm today in Illinois, including doubling the amount of funding for domestic fertilizer production to $500 million and increasing technical assistance for adoption of precision agriculture methods. Chip, USDA hopes that those programs use technology and other tools to reduce the use of fertilizer.
Okay, and they're adding more than 680 counties to the double crop soybean list that are eligible for insurance coverage. So, again, they're trying to increase production. Now, in the open, I said to pull down commodity prices.
Mm-hmm.
They are trying to increase production because of the concern over scarcity around the world. But, you know, you throw more money at the fertilizer production, and then you encourage the use of less fertilizer through the precision plant. So they're doing both things here. I talked to Zippy about it. We'll get his comments here in a bit.
Well, officials in Shanghai claimed that half of the city has achieved zero COVID status while also imposing the tightest COVID-19 restrictions thus far. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says it's less expensive for cars to fill up on electricity than gasoline. As House Republicans raise their concerns to Biden's top transportation official, the drivers in rural areas will not benefit from increased spending on EVs. And Chip, environmental and animal rights groups are pressuring the Biden administration to weigh in on a California Prop 12 case the Supreme Court has decided to hear. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Echelkamp, editor of The Scoop. Good morning, Margie.
Good morning, Chip.
Okay, let's talk about building up the carbon markets. What do you got?
Yeah, I think that we are at a point in time. We've got, 16 plus carbon opportunities available to farmers. And a lot of these companies are saying this is a roadmap that will be part of our future, right? But they're to get from point A to point B, a little bit of a stumbling block. So we are looking at the building blocks to help springboard farmers and springboard the adoption into the future of these carbon programs. I think two examples really illustrate this well. One would be Nutrien's Sustainable Nitrogen Outcomes Program. It is still available for farmers to participate in and sign up on through May 31. This only requires baseline, only thing to get involved in this program is a 5% reduction in your nitrogen applied to your corn, wheat, or cotton. And what they're hoping to do, in a lesson that Nutrien says that they have learned, is to simplify the enrollment, simplify the participation, because that'll set a building block of data for future engagement. Our friends at Truterra also made an announcement. They are bringing in three what they are calling agronomic transition experts to help farmers with these soil health principles that we know are so integral in being able to sequester carbon. And so these three individuals will be on call and ready to help those Truterra ag retailers and their farmer customers implement soil health practices out in the field.
Yeah, it's a different technique. It involves different practices, and the Truterra plan is to help farmers understand how to implement those different practices, right?
It is, and it's all, again, short-term wins for those long-term outcomes, I think, is the new focus.
Gotcha. Good stuff, Margie. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chip.
You bet. Learn more about it, www.thedailyscoop.com. All right, when we come back, we've got the conversation with AFBF President Zippy Duvall right here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Very happy to have Zippy Duval, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, with us. Mr. Duval, welcome back to AgriTalk. It's good to talk with you again.
Well, thank you, Chip. I always enjoy being with you.
Good, good, good. Okay. President Biden and the White House staff are full of ideas right now to boost production. Last week, they announced an idea to increase loan rates on wheat and soybeans, offer crop insurance incentives on double crop beans. And then today, President Biden and Secretary Vilsack are heading to Illinois. They're going to announce that 681 more counties are eligible for double crop beans insurance. They're going to push the Precision Ag program. They're doubling up funding support for domestic fertilizer production. What is American Farm Bureau's reaction to all of this?
Well, first off, you know, we also understand that there's going to be a need for more food because of what's going on around the world. And we very much appreciate the administration looking for ways to help us increase production. What they're going to announce today and opening up counties, we're welcoming that. But, you know, a lot of our farmers are looking at the feasibility of being able to do that. They got their seed either in the ground or it's in the barn. A lot of our guys are running a little late because of Mother Nature affecting their soils. So whether or not it's a reality for all farmers, that's probably not the case. Some farmers will be able to take advantage of it. And then, of course, you got to look at the cost of production in that second crop. And will they be able to get enough money out of that second crop, enough production out of that second crop to meet the cost of producing it?
Right, right. Yeah, we've had some conversation with some policymakers that are suggesting that they don't believe that this is even the role for USDA or for the Fed to influence acres. Isn't that the market's job?
Well, yes, we believe it is the market's job. And we think the market is helping shape production because with the increased commodity prices, we've seen it drives farmers to the market and they'll produce what the market's calling for. I think in this day and time where we know there's going to be a food shortage, the administration is trying to find ways to increase that production, and we applaud that.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. Now we get to talk about something that we don't talk about very often in agriculture, and that is the Security and Exchange Commission. They've got a proposal out there called the Enhancement and Standardization of Climate-Related Disclosures for Investors. Now, American Farm Bureau came out against that. What is it and why do farmers need to be aware of it?
Well, they're trying to get those companies that's traded on the stock exchange to follow their carbon footprint all the way back to the farm. And we don't think that we've never had the exchange to regulate agriculture. And we don't think they have the authority to do that. What we need to understand, we don't need to add any more cost with regulation to our farmers. We're already overregulated, and it is important to know that our farmers don't have consultants and lawyers that's on staff full time to be able to keep up with the bookkeeping that goes along with that. So we just think this is a bad move, and it's another area where the federal government is overreaching. We're being regulated, and it's an overreach of affecting how farmers can produce.
Yeah, yeah. Farm Bureau is encouraging farmers to participate in the comment period, which was just extended into the middle of June, wasn't it?
It was, and we asked for that extension, and we are appreciative that they give us that extension, because there was, I think it's over a 500-page report. Our farmers need time to consume that and be able to form their opinions and make comments. And we've had a tremendous reaction from our grassroots membership of sending messages to them about how we want them to think about this before they do it and how it affects agriculture.
Right, right. Go to the Farm Bureau website for some direction on how to submit that comment.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Another one that has been in the news, of course, is the climate smart commodity proposals that are out there. USDA's got a program in place, and they've invested $1 billion in the pilot projects out there. This is one that Farm Bureau is supportive of, correct?
We're supportive of those pilot projects, and we have written letters in support of five of those projects. And we know that there's probably, I think there's over 350 projects being proposed. And we understand that there's a lot more than the five that we wrote letters in support of. And we're not doing it in a way that we're rejecting them. We think there's a lot of good programs out there, but we reframed our support to the ones that our state farm bureaus, who are our federated partners and members, the ones that they're supporting.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Changing gears just a bit here, I want to talk about the Waters of the U.S. rule and the process and everything. We had a conversation recently with EPA Administrator Michael Regan. I asked him about WOTUS, and he emphasized not once but twice that farmers and agriculture will get the same exemptions that were available pre-2015. Is that good enough, Zippy?
No, it's not good enough, because we didn't think it was clear then. You know, our farmers are interested in providing clean water, because, you know, we own this land. A lot of this land has been in our families for generations. We all want to leave it in better shape than what we found it. We need to have a rule like we have that was put in place in 2020 that gives us clear rules so that our farmers can interpret it and deliver that. And, you know, they're having listening sessions or listening panels right now, and they just completed their first one. And we're very concerned about the diversity that we see on those panels. We think that they limited the people and their experience with Waters of the U.S. rule, and they need to have a more wide variety of people and their experiences on the ground experience with those rules so that they can make wise decisions as they move forward in rewriting this rule. We need farmers that have experienced this and the difficulties they've gone through to try to motivate the 2015 rule.
Okay. You know, you had a very successful campaign initiated by Farm Bureau, the Ditch the Rule. What is Farm Bureau planning here to influence the outcome of the final rule on WOTUS?
Well, we continue to ask our membership to continue to communicate with EPA, and we've had an overwhelming response from our grassroots telling EPA their concerns and their stories from their individual farms. And we're going to continue that movement, and we're going to make sure that we're encouraging them to find that diversity in these other nine listening panels that they're going to have across the country, to make sure that the farmer's voice and the true picture of how the Waters of the U.S. rule can affect our farmers negatively.
All right. All right. President Duvall, what are Farm Bureau's latest observations on immigrant farm labor? With all the chaos and the crisis at the border, do you think the Congress has the desire or even the determination to take on immigration?
Well, I've been to the border, and it is a mess at the border. And it is not only a mess from all the people coming across into those communities. Our farmers and ranchers have suffered terribly down there, and they think the federal government has abandoned them because they got people walking across their farms. They're even fearful for their lives in a lot of cases. Do I think that Congress has what it takes to get immigration reform and to fix what's at the border? It surely doesn't look like that, but we need to make sure that we secure that border. And in that process of securing that border, we hope there might be an opportunity to have a piece of legislation that will modernize our guest worker program so that we can have year-round workers here, so that the workers that are here that aren't documented can have some way of being a flexible visa so that they can stay here, continue to work in agriculture, and to work on the wage rate so that our farmers and ranchers can afford it. Agriculture and the lack of labor, that is the biggest limiting factor that American agriculture has. If they want us to be more productive, give us the workers to be productive with.
There you go. There you go. Instead of playing with loan rates and crop insurance, let's get some labor fix in place and get to work out there. President Duvall, you've been very generous with your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chip. Glad to talk to you anytime.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That is Zippy Duvall, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation. Coming up next, we got the Farmer Forum, Joe from California and James from New Mexico, right here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us. Give us an update on what's happening in the markets. Plus signs, corn, soybeans, wheat, soybean oil, bean meal is really the only market that's pulling back today. Beej, what's going on?
So good, strong, broad strength there. Like you mentioned, the meal market continues to weaken. And if that remains the case, it probably will hold down soybeans somewhat, but definitely not the case today because soy oil is sharply higher, which is supporting soybeans. But really just broad-based buying being led mostly by the wheat market. We've got all kinds of concerns there. Spring wheat planting delays in the northern plains, the HRW crop issues in the central and southern plains, and just a gamut of concerns there on the supply side of things ahead of USDA's report tomorrow, which will feature the first winter wheat crop estimate.
Right. Absolutely. And if you want some perspective on that, Brian and I had a conversation on yesterday's PM edition of AgriTalk. Go back and give that a listen. Take us over to the livestock trade.
Well, we're seeing a little bit of corrected buying show up here in the live cattle market. But because of the strength in the corn market this morning, feeder cattle are under pressure. So we got cattle futures going in opposite directions. If feeders remain under pressure, it's probably going to be difficult for live cattle to sustain the corrective strength or at least build on it, even if it does sustain through the close today. And then the hog market, can't say a whole lot there other than the fact that just continues to erode. And I talked about it yesterday, but now we got June hogs below the cash index. That's very unusual for this time of year.
Yeah, and they've spiked support at $100 again this morning. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Davis, it is time to broaden our horizons from outside of the Midwest and get an update on what is going on in some different parts of the country.
Fire it up, homie.
Looking forward to the conversation. We've got the Farmer Forum, which is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement, www.agweb.com/ACAM to learn more about that. Joe Del Bosque out in California. Joe, welcome back to the Farmer Forum. How are you?
Good morning, Chip. I'm doing as well as I can. Thank you.
Excellent, excellent. Let's bring James into the conversation, and then we'll come right back to you, Joe, and get an update on what's going on out your way. James Johnson in New Mexico. James, welcome back to AgriTalk. It's been 3 years since we last talked. How are you?
Yeah, Chip, it's been a little while, and I'm probably doing better than I deserve, to be honest.
Well, I can't wait to hear about it. Thanks so much for making time for us today, James. Okay, back out to Joe. Joe, what are you working on right now? What's what is occupying your time?
Well, we're down to just a few crops now because of the drought. We had to eliminate our asparagus and sweet corn programs. But right now, we're actually harvesting cherries. We started last Saturday, and we're also planting melons. We've been planting melons since about the last day of March, and we'll continue planting every week until about the end of June, so that when we harvest, we'll start harvesting what we started planting in March. We'll start harvesting at the end of June and continue harvesting until the end of September. And then we have almonds, and the almonds are right now basically trying to water them and keep them going. We don't have a lot of water. That's a big concern, and we may even have interruptions in the deliveries of some of our water.
Okay, Joe, having to make that kind of a decision to not plant or not harvest an asparagus crop, not have a sweet corn crop. How often have you had to make a decision like that?
We've actually had to do that a number of times. This was particularly difficult because we had been doing asparagus for like 22 years. And our asparagus is a perennial crop. So
yeah.
The asparagus that we had was 5 years old. It had a life expectancy of 8 to 10 years old. So it still had some life in it. And we had to cut it short.
Oh, good grief. Joe, I planted a couple of roots of asparagus 4 years ago, and I'm finally hoping to get a crop off of it this year. That had to be an unbelievably difficult decision, and it's just because you didn't have enough water to keep it going, right?
Had two reasons. Water was one, and the other one, of course, is labor and competition from Mexico. But nevertheless, it was a program we've been doing for quite a while. And what hurts the most is, you know, we had also about 70 people that had been working for us, some of them for those 22 years, that lost their jobs.
That's heartbreaking, Joe. Wow. Okay, let's go down to New Mexico. James Johnson. James, what's occupying your time now?
So we just we finished up planting our cotton crop yesterday. We're busy irrigating and fertilizing an onion crop right now, getting ready to start harvesting onions in a couple of weeks. I am currently packing some onions that we're bringing up out of Chihuahua right now. And for the people that are going to ask why I'm bringing onions out of Chihuahua, it comes down to, you know, the competition and the cost of things and labor, honestly. You know, there's only so much that we can do here now because of cost and because of competition and lack of labor. So that's kind of got us occupied right now. Struggling to get enough people working in my packing shed. After 2 years of being paid not to work, it's kind of hard to get people to come back.
yes sir. James, in the conversation that we just had with Zippy Duvall, president of the Farm Bureau, he talked about how the border is a mess, how what do you deal with as far as the border issues. Tell us about them.
So when Zippy, one of his trips to the border, he actually visited with my uncle and my cousin, which have ranch land just to the west of our farms. And in that, so approximately 5 miles west of my farm headquarters, there's a 2,200 foot gap. So inauguration night, when everybody lost their job that was working on the border wall, that was part of it that was not finished. And all the panels and everything are laying there on the ground. And that's kind of been ground zero in this area for illegal immigration. And there's so much crossing right there in that spot that it literally looks like cow trails coming across and going north out of that area. And these groups are coming across now. So these are very organized groups that are coming across. People have become a commodity to the cartel. They're actually, from what I understand, the profitability right now on crossing people has it's become more profitable for them than the drug trade. And so part of the problem that we see here on the border is these huge groups that are coming across, and the lack of compassion from their guides, their coyotes, if you will, that are leading them across. And, you know, that's part of, you know, we're seeing damage. We're seeing all these trails going across. We're seeing problems with, you know, when they get to a point and they're out of water or out of food, they start getting desperate. And then, you know, it's getting hot out here. So inevitably in the next few weeks, we're probably going to start seeing some deaths.
My gosh, unimaginable, the danger and the risk that it creates. Does it have any direct, impact on your farming operation, James?
So, I'm a little bit, at an advantage, I guess, because the wall was finished immediately through me. But with that gap to the west, that drives most of the traffic to the west. But
okay.
Pre-wall days, so whenever people say that the wall didn't help, pre-wall days, we had huge problems with drive-throughs. So, you know, you'd have a vehicle that would be loaded with either drugs or people, and it would either be picked up on this side, on the U.S. side of the border, or would actually drive across.
Right.
And a lot of times where the danger would come was from the chase that would ensue and the people trying to flee back to Mexico. So that part has completely stopped. And I think one of the, so to give people a little bit of an idea of what we do, we literally farm in the shadow of the wall. And so I've got about 6 miles along this border wall that I farm. It's my south turn row. And I guess one of the beauties about being this close, it's kind of like being in the chute with the calves and pushing the calves forward.
Yeah.
The closer you are, the less they can kick you.
Yep.
And I think that's a lot of the same scenario that we have. So we're so close, these people, when they do cross, they just want to get out of here. And
right.
It's really when they get about 8 to 10 miles into the U.S. that they start getting pretty desperate. And if they get lost and start coming back, they're also desperate.
Right, right. Joe, we've talked about immigration issues in the past with you. What's your take on the situation? Zippy said we need to get the border under control and then work on to modernize the guest worker visas. That makes a lot of sense.
It does. You know, we still, despite everything that's going on, we still have to do something about our workers that we have here stateside. I have no idea how many of our farm workers are undocumented, but I've heard numbers as high as 70 or 80%. And, you know, a lot of them live here permanently. They have families here and everything. They're part of our communities, part of our you know, our farms and everything, and we need to try to do something for them. They deserve it. They worked right through the pandemic. They didn't skip a beat, and they deserve to have at least legal status. As far as guest workers, you know, we've been pushing for that because we have these seasonal huge demands for labor in the summertime here in California, where everybody starts picking hand-picked crops like melons, tomatoes, tree fruit, grapes, lettuce, you name it, all, you know, we need hundreds of thousands of people to do that. That still needs to be done. We're in a, you know, in a terrible drought right now, so our shortage is not going to be as bad because we have cut back our acreage, but it still needs to be done. You know, we need to do it before we run into, into problems later on.
Yeah. And Joe, that's on a seasonal basis. When I think about the dairies that are short on labor and rely on guest workers, however you want to describe it, the need that Zippy was talking about to modernize is so that they can stay legally year around and provide labor on those farms. That's something that you'd be in favor of too, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Now, the current H-2A program needs to be reformed a little bit. First of all, you can't keep them here year round. And then their minimum wage is about $2 an hour higher than our regular California wage, which, by the way, we're at $15 an hour minimum wage in California. Hello. And then you have to provide them with housing and transportation, right, and everything else. It's very, very expensive. A lot of growers are doing it over in Salinas,
right,
Valley. They're doing it because of the housing issues.
Okay, excellent. We need to take a break, but we're going to keep this conversation about water and labor going. Joe Del Bosque from California, James Johnson from New Mexico.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's May 17th online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk and the Farmer Forum. We've got Joe Del Bosque from California, James Johnson from New Mexico. Joe, excellent points on the labor issues at the end of the last segment. I kind of want to jump to the marketing side of the crops that you've got, Joe. How are the markets for the cherries that you're picking and for the melons that you're going to be planting?
The markets for the cherries is actually pretty good right now because we had some weather conditions that reduced the crop. We had freeze in February and March, and then we had some rains that damaged the crop. So that's doing pretty good. The almonds are the ones that are hurting the most because of the trade issues with the containers and the shipping. We ship 70% of our almonds overseas, and they can't get on a boat. And a lot of them are stuck waiting to get shipped out. That is affecting the flow of our product and our prices.
Gotcha. James, what about you? Must be good demand for onions.
Yeah, so the onion market right now is really tight. I mean, supplies are in very few hands, and it's funny because it seems like a tight market makes a tighter market because everybody jumps in and harvests a little early sometimes and pushes yields, overall yields down. Honestly, there were a lot of guys in the onion market and overall in the vegetable market in the last year and a half that just hemorrhaged money, myself included. And there were a lot of guys that cut back. A lot of people looked at the input costs going into this year, labor supply going into this year, and alternative crops like Pima cotton being really high right now. and made some huge changes in crop plans. And so that's really tightened things up. We're struggling right now, as everybody is. Freight is just absolutely clobbering us right now. There's some of this stuff that it's probably going to go out at $6 plus a mile. And that's just unheard of. I mean, a year ago, we were probably down into the 350, 375 a mile range for freight. So that's kind of scary going forward.
James, you're not saying anything that makes me think the fire under food inflation is going away anytime soon.
You know, I think this is probably here to stay for quite some time as far as food inflation goes. And it's everybody thinks that we're making a lot of money, but we're spending a lot of money, and all of our cash flows right now are in a crunch just because it's taken so much money to get to the point that we're at. We've had huge inflation in our labor bill. And I don't, you know, this is not really the place to throw out there how much we're spending on fertilizer and chemical, but every single thing and every input that I have right now has gone up 30 plus percent, some as high as 300%.
Yep. What about availability in your area, James? Are you getting what you need to grow that cotton crop and to grow your onions?
It's a little iffy. It seems like everything's a little bit harder to find. And I sometimes wonder how much of this stuff is being hoarded. So especially with the chemistry, you call and you try to order chemistry and they don't have it, but then you talk to a neighbor or a friend and he's like, well, I've got a year and a half's worth of supply in the barn. And so I think we've all kind of been a little bit nervous in the last year and a half on what we do with inputs. And I think if we can get a hold of it, we try to get as much of it as we can so that we're covered. But this, you know, it wasn't all that long ago, 2 years ago, everything was just in time and it really flowed really well. And so now that we can't depend on just in time, we have to really stock up, which again, just cuts into cash flow and makes it even harder to manage some of these things.
Yeah. Joe, are you dealing with some of the same supply input issues?
Well, we're certainly dealing with higher costs of fertilizer and fuel. As far as getting supplies, there have been a few things that we've been short of. But where we're concerned is later in the summer when we start shipping, we experienced last year shortage of fiberboard, that is cardboard for our boxes for our melons, cardboard and pallets even because of the issues with wood products. That's going to be a big concern this summer.
Right, right. James, we talked with Joe about some of the water issues that he's dealing with. What is your water supply like?
So we're all underground irrigation. And, you know, we're in the middle of probably one of the driest parts of the desert that there is. So it's always been a concern for us. Our aquifer, if you will, has gone down some, but not as much as other areas of the West. But it's always a concern for us. And it's one of the reasons that we use as much technology as possible to use as little water as possible to grow a crop.
Right. Right. Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay. Joe, I can't let you get away without mentioning it. You did a great job on network news the other day. Did a really nice job representing farmers. Congratulations on that. What was that experience like?
Well, that was great. That was the NBC one. I'm pretty sure you're talking about.
Yep.
And we're glad to be able to get, you know, a farmer to speak to the nation. They need to hear from us.
Yep. What was missing from that broadcast that you wish they would have included?
You know, I wish they had talked a little bit more. Well, we did talk about it in my interview, but it wasn't in the broadcast about how this drought is impacting not just the farmers, but the whole community. The whole Central Valley is hurting. Small towns and small businesses and everything. There needs to be a little bit more said about that.
Very good. Very good. Joe, thank you so much for making time for us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chip. Been a pleasure.
All right. That is Joe Del Bosque, California. James, it's not going to be 3 years before you're back on again. I can guarantee you that. Thank you so much.
All right. Sounds good, Chip.
All right. That is James Johnson down in New Mexico. Great conversation with those guys. Thank you so much for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. Jamie Kawaki from Paragon Investments will be our guest right here on AgriTalk.